Cindy Hooper, a veteran of various local, state, and national political campaigns, and author of the recent Conflict, African American Women, and the New Dilemma of Race and Gender Politics, is the featured author on this installment of New Books in African American Studies. This is an interview series where writers of African American life, culture, arts, and sciences discuss their new books. Hello, I'm Vershawn Young, your host, and I hope you stay tuned for this lively exchange with the author.
Hi, Cindy.
Hi.
Today we're talking to Cindy Hooper, who is a veteran of numerous local, state, and national political campaigns and founder of the National Organization for African American Women, headquartered in Washington, D.C. Cindy Hooper has a master's degree in government from the Johns Hopkins University and is a member of the American Political Science Association. Today, we're talking to Cindy about her provocative and informative new book, Conflict, African American Women, and the New Dilemma of Race and Gender Politics. This book was published by Prager Press in 2012, and we're so delighted to have Cindy on the show today. Can you begin by telling us a little bit about yourself?
Okay, great. I grew up in Tappahannock, Virginia, a small town centrally located in the state, and that's really where I began writing. And then shortly thereafter, I took a government class in high school, and I loved it and fell in love with the whole idea of politics, electoral politics. And I decided to, when I went to college, that I wanted to study political science. So I went to Morgan State University, where I did study political science under the tutelage of the renowned professor, Dr. Rosalynn Turnbull Penn, which is, she's one of the nation's foremost researchers and historians when it comes to African-American women's history. So they really began to foster my love of researching and also the role African-American women had, particularly in electoral politics. Shortly after that, I worked a short stint on Capitol Hill, and I also worked in several political campaigns. And I decided to go back to graduate school. So I went to Johns Hopkins University, where I studied government under Dr. Benjamin Ginsberg. One of the things I embarked on was my graduate thesis, which was a study of the war on poverty. It was called an assessment of the war on poverty effort and its impact on economic and social conditions of the current poverty population. And then after that, I worked at several public affairs firms, including Burson Marsteller and the American Highway Users Alliance. Since then, I have been teaching on various levels of education, teaching history, American studies, analytical reasoning. I also supervise graduate students at George Mason University and Marymount University who are also embarking on careers in education. I'm a member of a variety of associations, including the American Political Science Association, the National Women's Studies Association, and Delta Sigma Theta Sorority, Incorporated. I'm the founder of the NOAW, which is the National Organization for African American Women, whose mission is to attain gender equality, promote issues that promote social change, and to mobilize women to connect with various aspects of social, political, and economic life. And that brings us to my book.
Well, what I want to say is that I think that that bio is extremely in-depth. I love that because it shows that you have not only the educational background to do the research for this book, but you have the real world experience to talk about politics. So, yes, can you tell us how you came personally to write this book, Conflict, African American Women, and the New Dilemma of Race and Gender Politics?
The 2008 presidential election was historical on many, many different levels. Of course, with the election of the first president of color, was the whole fight, so to speak, for the Democratic presidential nomination, which included the first woman, then Senator Hillary Clinton, vying for the presidential nomination against an African-American male candidate. And so, you know, the whole context of that contest, in the beginning, Hillary Clinton was the assumed front runner. And as President, well, then Senator Obama, slowly began to gain momentum after the Iowa caucuses, there were a lot of African-American women within my circle and beyond who were like, wow, like we actually have a choice between two of our identities. Like, you know, where do we fall? You know, does it matter? You know, how will it impact how we vote or decide to vote for either candidate? So in, you know, conducting some polls and research, it was clear in the beginning that the majority of African-American women were supporting Hillary Clinton. But as Barack Obama gained momentum and as African-American women shifted their support to Obama's campaign, Hillary Clinton's campaign began to flounder a bit.
Now, why did they do that? In other words, African-American women, by and large, early on were supporting Hillary Clinton. And another way to say that, based upon some of the statements that you make in your book, is that they were supporting a woman. Mm-hmm. And then they shifted to support not just a man, but to support a black man. So they were supporting this candidate, perhaps on the basis of race. So why make that shift?
I think it came down to relatability. I also think it came down to the whole historical aspect of having a black president, something that many people never thought would occur during our lifetime. And I think that people really connected with Michelle Obama, particularly black women. You know, she was dispatched to go across the country, and she spoke to millions of black women throughout the various campaign stops that, you know, she was featured in. And black women really seemed to receive her message. You know, she talked about the issues that, you know, many black women care about: education, health, childcare, things that impact us in ways in which we feel like we don't hear a lot of mainstream candidates talking specifically to us. And I think that their ability to really reach out and to sort of like speak our language. And when Michelle Obama talks about, you know, when Barack was a community activist and when he was really beginning his political career, and she says, I spent so many nights alone. I felt like a single parent. I know how you feel. You know, I've walked in your shoes. I was a working mother, like so many women in this country are. I think that that message resonated. And so I think that helped to transfer a lot of those votes over to Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm. You also, in the course of your book, talk about the ways in which Michelle Obama helped to authenticate Barack Obama's blackness when his racial authenticity came into question. Yeah. How did that affect voter choice or women's choice to vote for Barack Obama?
I think that was a small part of it. I think the main thing was that people really related to Michelle Obama. They found her extremely likable. You know, she was able to articulate a message that really reached, you know, African-American men and women. But in terms of the authenticity of his color, I think, you know, you have some people talking about, well, she is, you know, the descendant of slaves. I think it was a small aspect of it. I think that seeing a black woman in a position of power was something that, you know, many black women took a tremendous amount of pride in. And I think those things combined, you know, and the fact that, you know, there would be a black family in the White House, you know, was something that, you know, really inspired a lot of black people.
Okay. And I'm not to get too far ahead in the book, but one of the comments that you make in the course of the book is that about Michelle Obama is that she raised the profile of African-American women in the mainstream.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Yeah, most definitely. You know, she's extremely educated, articulate. She's a very powerful speaker. And I think that not just African-American women, but women in particular, you know, they found her to be, you know, an awesome role model. You know, and she's really, really likable. During the 2010 midterm elections, she was dispatched by the Democratic Party primarily to campaign for those Senate candidates who were in those tight races across the country because of her popularity. So I think she's key, you know, in terms of the president's electoral success, without question, you know.
So can you tell us a little bit about the background that you took into account in order to make some of your claims in the book? For instance, you spend one chapter talking about the women's suffrage movement. Mm-hmm. You talk about the civil rights movement. You even discuss black feminism. Can you talk to us about those historical moments and how they relate to contemporary African-American women voters?
Okay. Let's start with, we go back to the women's suffrage movement. I think that dynamic is still a work in progress. You know, we still have some people who were surmised that that feminism is a white middle class female construct. That, you know, the bridge still needs to be built between, you know, I guess the priorities of white women and, you know, women of color. And I think there has been a lot of progress, you know, in those areas. However, I think that's why, you know, there even was a black feminist movement. Now, during the early years of, you know, the suffrage movement, much like the civil rights movement, black women were put aside, so to speak. You know, I mean, literally in some of the women's marches, black women were told to, you can march in the back during the suffrage movement. And given recently with the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, you know, I was listening to Julian Bond when he was asked, you know, no women were allowed to speak that day.
Mm-hmm.
And he was talking about how Dorothy Height, you know, and, you know, she's one of the founders of this whole women's rights movement, period, for women, black or white, and how she still, you know, worked behind the scenes. You know, you had Diane Marsh. I mean, it's just too many to name women who were crucial, you know, to not only the March on Washington success, but the civil rights movement, period. So, you know, it was good to see on this past Wednesday many women and women of color speaking prominently at the march. So obviously there's been a lot of progress. But, you know, we're still working. I often ask people, okay, we've had the first black male president. Who do you think will be president first, a white woman or a black woman? And, you know, most people will say without question, a white woman. And then I will say, I think I actually took a poll on this too for the NOAW. Who do you think has the best opportunity as a black woman to become president. And without question, overwhelmingly, the response was Michelle Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Michelle Obama is not even an elected official. So what does that say about our current crop of black female elected officials?
Right.
You know, there are no black females in the Senate. You know, there's never been a black female governor. The most recent black female lieutenant governor was Jennifer Carroll in Florida, but she resigned amid a controversy.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I work closely with Dr. David DeSantis, the Joint Center for the Joint Center, and one of the things he was explaining to me that if we look long range, he feels strongly that Kamala, she's the Attorney General of California. She perhaps is, you know, in the best position to ascend to the governorship of a state as a woman of color. Now, she's also East Indian, African American as well. But he feels like she's in the best position to make that ascension. So I still think, as far as electoral politics, and because we saw those themes in those movements, you know, black women still weren't at the forefront. You know, so even with the suffrage movement, the civil rights movement, and even if you look at the current state of electoral politics for black women, we're still lagging behind. Because in terms of the African American electorate, we are the majority.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but, you know, our representation is not reflected in the same way.
So let me ask you what you hope your book will accomplish for readers. What is it, just to inform us? Do you want us readers to do something different? What do you hope will come about from your by having your book read and being out there, so to speak?
Well, I'm hoping that it would have been a catalyst for change, in the sense that, you know, I have some chapters in there that in which, you know, I talk about ways in which we can get more African American women to run for elective office. That's big for me. I feel like, you know, African Americans, period, you know, we need to be represented more, you know, on the, you know, local, state, and national level of politics.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that, that, you know, that we should be satisfied with just having, you know, our president, you know. You know, he needs support, too, in Congress and in the Senate, and if he tries to, you know, pass his legislation and get his agenda through for the next 3 years or so. So, you know, that was big for me to, and I also wanted, you know, in informing people that, you know, hey, you know, these are the areas, you know, in which we really need to focus on. My hope was that it would, in the end, result in more people being elected to office, you know, who look like us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you a controversial question about your book.
okay.
You make a very direct statement about the high-profile women in the 2008 campaign. And most people will recall the prominent women, Hillary Clinton, Michelle Obama, as, you know, the president's, I mean, the presidential candidate's wife, and possibly the first lady if he wins, and Sarah Palin.
Yes.
But your statement is, and let me find it to quote it directly. hang on one second. Hillary Clinton is and always will be a phenomenal woman. Sarah Palin was comical, and the act hasn't stopped. Now, you know, a lot of people would disagree with you about Sarah Palin.
Okay, well, okay, was that in the book?
That's in the book.
Really?
Yeah. It's, in my edition, it's page 99, chapter 12.
Okay, because 99. Oh, okay. No. Okay, I know exactly what you're talking about. Okay, these are quotes that were written by respondents to our surveys. So we asked them to write, and they were all women of color, to write their comments in terms of reflecting on the prominent women in the campaign.
You know what? You just cleared it up for me. Although I like the statement.
Well, you know, it's very interesting about Sarah Palin. I gave a lecture at Edgewood College last year during the time of the presidential election. And I asked the audience, I said, who can tell me which woman has garnered more votes than any other woman in history in the United States in electoral politics?
Uh-huh.
Everybody's giving an incorrect answer. Correct answer is Sarah Palin.
Mm.
You know, because she went past Hillary Clinton when she was on the ballot with John McCain. And even though they didn't win, you know, she still garnered, I think it was like someone in like 30 million votes or something like that. But she actually is the standard bearer for that, you know, in electoral politics. So it is true. People are like, wow.
But it's not an uncommon belief among, I don't want to say African Americans, because I know a number of people who think that Sarah Palin was not a serious candidate for that office. And as a matter of fact, I remember after she gave her first debate, even people in the Republican Party were calling for her to resign because she did so horribly. So it's not, even though that's not, those are not your words, it's not it's not an uncommon belief that one of the survey participants, what this survey participant uttered.
Yeah, I wanted, and the reason why I included it in the book, because I wanted to include, you know, the thoughts of as many women as I could, because I knew that they would, you know, they were varied. And so I wanted to include that, you know, in the context of the book so people can see the full range of where we are and how we think and how we were reflecting on that whole phenomenon during the campaign. But I just looked it up. Sarah Palin got 60 million votes as the vice presidential candidate in 2008. So she is the standard bearer to Hillary Clinton's approximately 20 million or so during the Democratic primaries and caucuses.
Okay. At this point, we'd like to hear a little bit of the book. Would you mind reading a passage or two for us?
Sure. All right. Today, African-American women can stand proudly on the legacy of millions of humanists. Men, women, and even children of various races and ethnicities who laid the groundwork for the world that many have the opportunity to thrive in today. Grateful for the sacrifices and the trailblazing that would have prevented any of us in this current day from living the exuberant lives that are led in this new millennium, we pay homage to the indebtedness of so many throughout our history. The new millennium black woman has vast amounts of opportunity that her forebears could only imagine. Black women are the chief executive officers of Fortune 500 companies, mayors of major cities, Nobel Prize winners, Olympic gold medalists, and now a black woman stands tall as the First Lady of the United States. The world has changed dramatically since the first Africans were brought to the shores of America. There are black women in positions of power and influence that their ancestors could only dream of. For the first time in history, the First Lady of the United States is an African-American woman. Oprah Winfrey, media mogul and one of the most influential and wealthiest people on the planet, is an African-American woman. African-American women are now in power positions to influence not only this nation, but also the world. When Forbes announced the 25 power women of the 2010 midterm elections, Michelle Obama was the only African-American woman on the list. She campaigned for numerous Democratic Party candidates during the midterm election season, including in key battleground states. In some cases, she became a bigger draw on the campaign trail than the president, hosting events that outsold other events hosted by her president husband. The new millennium black woman has definitely arrived to embrace a new diaspora. Being socialized in a patriarchal society, the selfless humanity of the African-American woman has her routinely putting everyone else's priorities above hers. Black women have had to maneuver between both of their racial and gender identities for centuries within the legal and political landscape. Since the American legal system both perpetuated and sanctioned racism and sexism.
Very excellent. Thank you. And I think you have a good sense of how this book reads, because it is very well written. Can you tell us what you're working on now, the work that we can look forward to?
Actually, I'm giving consideration continuing the whole context of African-American women in electoral politics. I am very interested in what happens as far as the development of the 2016 presidential campaign. If any women of color will emerge, I know we're hearing the rumblings of Hillary Clinton emerging again. Again, as the presumptuous front runner. But I'm curious to see as far as if, you know, some newcomers come forward. They're Donna Edwards in Maryland, the first black female to represent Maryland in Congress. You know, as these women emerge, will they, you know, ascend to any sort of on start for a presidential campaign, or are they being seriously considered vice presidential candidates? I really want to continue the research and the advocacy, you know, in that area.
Thank you so much, Cindy. We look forward to that new work, and thank you for joining us on New Books in African American Studies.
You've been listening to a discussion with Cindy Hooper about her new book, Conflict, African American Women and the New Dilemma of Race and Gender Politics, published by Prager Press in 2012. If you haven't already, go out and get your copy today.